Okay, we're starting here at the top of Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph. Continue with the sugya that we left off with on the bottom of Kuf Bet Amud Bet. There, the Gemara discussed a brisa, a cryptic brisa, v'lokech sadeh b'shem chaviru. There are two possibilities. One possibility, we do force them to sell, and the other one, we don't force it. We had two explanations yesterday at the bottom of the daf. One from Rav Sheshet, who explains it in the context of the Reish Galuto, and then we had a second explanation according to Abaye, which according to Rashi is also in the name of the Reish Galuta, but according to other Rishonim is not necessarily includes the Reish Galuta. But Abaye's suggestion was that whether we obligate the mocher, the seller, to write him a second contract if he had written him an alternative contract to cover up. So now the Gemara is going to discuss the suggestion of Abaye, and it's going to take each piece of Abaye's statement. So the first, we're going to start three lines down on Marmar. Halokeach sadeh b'shem chaveiro. Person takes a sadeh, buys a sadeh in the name of his friend. Now, this is missing the girsa of Rashi of Reish Galuta, but if you look at Rashi himself says it's with the Reish Galuta's name on it. So we'll go with Rashi's interpretation here, that a person purchased a field, and he put the field in the Reish Galuta's name, again, to protect himself. We don't force the seller to write a second contract, which indicates, or after the fact, after the sale's gone through, we don't force him to write a second contract to say that the buyer really bought this property and not the Reish Galuta. The Gemara says, Pshita. Why would you have thought otherwise? Meaning that you bought the property, you asked him to write the contract in the name of Reish Galuta, he did exactly what you asked him to do. So why is there any question at hand? So the Gemara says, Ma'u de tema, what I have thought? Matzemale, miya de yet da'at, da'anai da'naf shei shal kilna. You knew that I was really buying the field for myself. Upanchia ba'amahu de kabe'inon. Right, so he says, and you know that I'm just using the contract as a cover, meaning that Rashi says panchia means that you gave to save my back or to give strength to the sale so that people can't be my arer on this sale. So I wrote in the Reish Galuta's name just to protect myself, but you knew that I was buying it. And I'm not just going to throw my money away. You know that I'm trying to buy the field for myself. Ella adata deschav leishtar achrina. Right? I would thought you're going to write me another shtar, and that's why I did it. Kamash Malan, he says, no, that the mocher has a right to say him to bet. Nermalei, in yon avdik, says, I did, or the tenai, or whatever conditions you asked me to fulfill, I did. You paid for a field, you asked me to write it in the Reish Galuta's name, and I took care of that. And if you're upset now, go to the person who you asked the shtar to be written in his name, go speak to him and have him write you a shtar. What are you getting involved with me? I did exactly what you asked me to do. I took the money and did whatever request you had. I've completed already. Now, the other half, Abaye's explanation is, V'yamamar lo amanat, kofina to mocher demkor. If he says, amanat, on condition, right, that you will write me an additional shtar, then we force the mocher to write an additional shtar. Then when it says, pshita, of course, what do you mean? If that's a condition of the sale, it says that you have to write me a secondary shtar, one that's in my name, one that's in the Reish Galuta's name, one that I can show to people to protect me from the property, and another one to show that it really is my property. Of course he has to write it, because that was a condition of the sale. He says, not that he tells the seller directly, but he tells the edim in front of the seller. Look, you guys understand what's going on here. I'm writing this shtar in the name of the Reish Galuta to protect myself, and you know that I need another shtar written here that's in my name. So Ma'adutayim, what I have thought, Matzir Malay, the mocher, the seller, can say to him, Amina shtar, I thought you meant when you were speaking to Adam and said, I need another shtar, I thought you meant you were going to go get a shtar from the Reish Galuta or from the other person that you bought it in his name. I didn't think you wanted it from me, so I'm finished. I'm done with you. Right? He says, well, why would I have gone to all the trouble to tell the Adam in front of you? That's right. If I just told the Adam, you would be correct. But the fact that I told the Adam in front of you was so that you knew that you were the one who was going to write me this additional shtar. I need it from you, that shtar. Right now, the Gemara brings, that explains Abaye's position, or how Abaye explained that brisa, that cryptic brisa. Two cases, one case where we obligate the mocher to write a second shtar, one case where we don't obligate the mocher to write a second shtar, and it has to do with the conditions under which it's done. If the conditions mean that it was a condition of the sale that there be a second shtar written, then the mocher is obligated to write that second shtar. And again, the case is where he's said in front of Edim, not that he says it directly to the mocher. And he said that because of it was done in front of Edim, then he has a demand, he can make a demand of the mocher, that if he was standing there, that he writes the shtar, because that's why he told it in front of Edim. And the other case where we don't obligate the mocher to write a second shtar is where he buys it, and the lokeach doesn't have a claim. He says, even though you know this whole thing was a cover or protect my field, despite that fact, we're not going to obligate you to write a second shtar because that's not what you asked for. I did what you asked me for, and after that, I'm off the hook. Now the Gemara brings a case. Rav Kahana, you have Zuza Kidna. Rav went and purchased flax, right? He gave money, and he purchased the flax. The Sof, Yaker Kidna. After a while, the flax went up in value. Zavne Marvete the Kidna, and then the person who had the flax, I mean, Rav Kahana bought the flax from him, but never necessarily took possession of the flax. And then this person went and sold the flax to a third party when the price was higher. Atikal made the Rav. So they came before Rav. He came before Rav. Rav Kahana said, can I go and take my money? I mean, I bought this flax. Now he sold it at a higher price to a third party. Can I go take my money from this guy, from the owner of the flax that sold it? If when he sold it, Amrei Haikidna to Kahana, who, if at the moment that he sold it, he said, I'm selling this flax that belonged to Kahana, Zilshokul, then you can go take your money. Vilo Lotishko. If not, you should not take it. And Rashi explains why. Because of Ribit. It looks like you are taking interest. Okay, come on. Who's this like? Now, let's just clarify the case here, and then we're going to see what the Gemara does with it or how the Gemara questions this. But we have a case where if Kahana goes ahead and purchases flax, he gives money over for flax, but he never receives or takes delivery of that flax. Then the owner of the flax who sold it to him goes and then sells it again to a third party at a higher price. So now Rav Kahana says, well, that really was my flax. I had purchased it. So now I want to get my money from him. So now if I go get my money from him, what's the problem? The problem is that when he bought the flax, it was, because they call it 4 shekel. When he sold the flax, when this owner of the flax sells it, he's selling it for 8 shekel. So Rav Kahana is actually getting 8 shekel. Now when Rav Kahana handed him 4 shekel, right, it looks like he lent him 4 shekel. And now when this guy's coming back to pay him back, it looks like he returned him 8 shekel. So it looks like he's charging interest for the money that he lent him. It looks like he lent him 4 shekel and he's getting back 8 shekel. So that's what Rav says. Rav says, if the seller of the flax says, this is Rav Kahana's flax that I'm selling to you, then it works, because then he's basically selling Rav Kahana, he's doing a transaction for on behalf of Rav Kahana, and therefore the extra money is really coming because he sold Rav Kahana's property and the money belongs to him. I mean, he took possession of the money wherever it is. On the other hand, if he doesn't say that I'm selling it on behalf of Rav Kahana, it sounds like the owner of flax is selling it by himself and he's just repaying Rav Kahana the money that he gave him. If that's the case, then it looks like there's interest. There are never problems with this case, but we'll see in a second what the Gemara does with that. Come on. Who does this case go like? The Gemara says, Kimnei Marovo, like we saw yesterday, the people from Eretz Yisrael, the Amru, Tamri, Mi Odir Leval Chitim, Shikinei Chitim Lebal Ma'ot. So he says, who told the Baal Chitim to take possession? Who told the seller of the wheat that the buyer was actually getting it? So we have a similar case to what happened yesterday by Bnei Rav. I'm reading the Gemara now according to the way Tosos reads it. Rashi actually reads this line as part of the question that we're going to see that follows this. Tosos reads this as a statement and then the question following it. Rashi reads this as part of a total question. So when we read the question later on, you'll understand how Rashi reads that as part of the question. But according to Tosos reads it as a statement, the Gemara is now assuming that you must indicate that you are buying or selling on behalf of another individual. So over here, the owner of the flax comes and sells it to the new buyer, the third-party buyer, after Rav Kahana bought it. Now, if he tells him this is Rav Kahana's wheat, then he knows that he's giving this money over to Rav Kahana, that the flax is being sold to the buyer, and the buyer is saying, oh, this money belongs to Rav Kahana, because he's saying, I'm selling on behalf of, the seller is saying, I'm selling on behalf of Rav Kahana. That's like the Bnei Marov, who say, if you indicate who you are selling or who you are acting on behalf of, then there can be a kinya, there can be a konen amakne. On the other hand, if he does not mention that it's Rav Kahana's flax, then when he goes and sells it to the third-party buyer in the end, the third party doesn't know that he's giving this money over to Rav Kahana. All he knows is that he's transacting with the owner of the flax. He doesn't know anything about Rav Kahana, because how could he be makne his kesef to the kone, or the one who's making the kinyan on that kesef, Rav Kahana? Rav Kahana, then he has no idea that Rav Kahana exists. So this is exactly like the Bnei Marova. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute, the cases are not exactly alike. Atu, mi ahiv Rav Kahana, arba, v'shoko tamnyo. Wait a minute. Rav Kahana did not hand him 4 shekel and then is expecting back 8 shekel. Kidna memelehu diakir. Wait a minute. What Rav Kahana benefited from here was the fact that the market price of the flax went up. And when this individual went and sold it the second time, he did that without permission, and he is migzel gazluhu. He's stealing from Rav Kahana, meaning that it's Rav Kahana's flax. And if Rav Kahana's flax on a market basis went up from 4 to 8, that's not ribis. That's not a problem. Rav Kahana owns the flax. And when he owns the flax and the flax goes up in value, that's his money. Wherever it is, that flax went up and that's his money. Now, when the individual goes and tries to sell the flax again from under Rav Kahana, I mean, he basically is selling the same item twice, right? Then he's a gazlan. And what's the din of a gazlan? A gazlan plays kishat gzeila. That's what it says. But it's not. Kol gazanim mishalim mishalim kishat gzeila. What's the shat gzeila? At the higher market price now. So he owes him the money because he stole from him. Not because we're trying to get a direct transaction between the third-party buyer who's buying the flax for the second time and the money getting to Rav Kahana. That's not what's going on here. What's going on here is Rav Kahana has a transaction with this seller and he owes him flax. Now, flax went up in value. That's Rav Kahana's luck. The market price went up, and that belongs to him. Now, when the flax owner goes and sells it again, he's stealing from Rav Kahana. He's stealing Rav Kahana's money. He has to repay him those 8 shekels. He's not paying him anything about the first 4 shekels that he purchased. He's just repaying him for the flax that he just now stole from him. And that's why he has to pay him 8 shekels. There's nothing to do with interest. There's nothing to do with the Bnei Marova. So that's the question according to Tosfos. According to Rashi, the whole thing reads as a question. Bitmia. You're going to set it up like Bnei Marova? How could you set it up like Bnei Marova? These aren't the same cases. And so the Gemara says, all right, now what's the case here? Mimrei Hatam Amona Havi Velo Mashkei Rav Kahana. Oh, no, the transaction's a little different over here because it was all done in Amana. It was done on trust, meaning that Rav Kahana never made a kinyan on the flax. So now, if Rav Kahana doesn't make a kinyan on the flax, we have a different situation over here. So it's Havi Velo Mashkei Rav Kahana Lekitna. Rav the Tamei, this is Rav according to his own reasoning. Damarav, usim amana b'pirot, and usim amana b'damim. That you're allowed to do a trust or a forward, it's basically a forward sale with pirot and not a forward sale for cash settlement. So let's see Rashi. We'll do Rashi's explanation. Tosfos disagrees a little bit with Rashi's explanation. Rashi says, what does it mean that he did a transaction b'amana? He says that he gave them money up front. He gave the flax seller money up front, but he did not have flax. He currently did not have flax on hand. He says, listen, here, I'm giving you 4 shekel. You'll give me flax. Now, the guy doesn't have flax to buy. He says, I'll go get you whenever I get you. I'll give you the flax later on in the year. Whenever you need 6 months from now, you purchasing it now for me at the price today. I'll deliver your flax in 6 months from now when you need it. Now, Rashi says that is called a manav, and it's mutar. Why? Because this individual can go out to the shuk and buy flax, meaning that the market price for flax has already been set. There's flax in the market. So he's making a choice now. He could actually go with the money that Rav Kahana gave him, buy the flax that he owes Rav Kahana, and pay him right now. The fact that he chooses not to is his own decision. And therefore, when he delivers the flax later on, even though the flax is worth more money, that is not considered interest or mechzek ribit, because he had the ability to buy it on the spot, and he chose to delay buying it. So because of that, it's not a problem of ribit. That's called amana. So Rav says that's only true if you settle with flax. Meaning that if Rav Kahana said, listen, I'm paying 4 shekel for the flax today, you deliver me that amount in 6 months from now. So now the guy could go buy the flax right now, hold on to it, and deliver him 6 months. Or he can hold the money and buy in 6 months from now. That's his choice. So now when he delivers the flax to Rav Kahana in the future, he basically bought a bushel of flax today, and he's delivering a bushel of flax. So there is no mechzek ribit because he bought a fixed volume of the commodity, and he's getting delivered that same fixed volume of the commodity. The fact that there's a difference in value in the commodity, that doesn't make it into mechzek ribit because he bought that volume and he's getting that volume. On the other hand, if Rav Kahana is buying it for cash settlement, which means that he's buying it today and he says in the future, in 6 months from now, you deliver me the cash value of a bushel of flax, then that does mechzek ribit because then Rav Kahana is paying him cash today and he's receiving cash in return. And that is mechzek ribit because then we're not dealing with a commodity, even though technically the transaction is exactly the same. Here we're dealing with something that's called mechzek ribit. It looks like interest. It's not literally interest because the change in the price has to do with the fact that the commodity's market price moved, not because he's charging an interest for any money lent them. But when you're dealing with a cash-to-cash transaction, that's mechzek. It looks like ribit. It looks like he lent them 4 shekel. He's getting 8 shekel back, even though it's based on a commodity's price. On the other hand, if he buys with the 4 shekel a bushel of flax, and he delivers him a bushel of flax later on, then that does not, mechzek, does not look like ribit. Right, that's the way Rashi explains it, and that's why over here Rav is saying to Rav Kahana, according to his shita, that here Rav Kahana paid money, never took possession of the flax, and Rav Kahana now wants to get his money, cash, a cash settlement. So that depends. So that's the way Rav says to him. It depends on how he formulated it. If he formulated it in a way that says that I'm selling Rav Kahana's flax, that means that whatever he sold on behalf of Rav Kahana, then the money belongs to Rav Kahana. On the other hand, if this was a forward transaction and the flax, this guy basically sold the flax without Rav Kahana delivering, and he's delivering him cash in the end and not flax, then Rav says that doesn't work because that is mechse ki ribit. That also takes issue with Rashi on one thing here, which he says that nobody agrees in the Gemara of Metzia that you're allowed to take cash today for delivery of a bushel later on if you don't own that item, the commodity, today. What Rav says, and what the Rav Yana, who's the one who argues on them, says that in the Gemara Bava Metzia, that you're allowed to do this only if you actually have flax in your possession. Even though you don't deliver the flax today, as long as you have the ability today to deliver that flax, then you can give it to him in the future. And that's not called a problem of a Mechseik Rebit. That's not a problem of a forward transaction. Whereas Rashi, you're suggesting that even if he doesn't own any flax, that he can go out and buy it. Tosfos tries to defend Rashi's position and says that maybe there's a difference between a loan and versus a transaction when there's a trade transaction, when there's a transaction on the commodity, versus when he loans it against the flax price, then there might be a problem, and everybody says you have to actually own the flax on the spot. Whereas over here, he's not borrowing the money, he's not doing it on a loan basis, he's just actually giving him the money and purchasing the flax. Then maybe, even if you don't have it in possession, you can go and buy it out in the shuk, and Rashi would be right. So that's the way Tosa settles the, or tries to reconcile Rashi with our Gemara over here and the Gemara and Bava Metzia. Okay, bringing in the new Mishnah. Goes, Ot chavero shave pruta. A person sells from his friend a shave pruta v'nishbalo, and then he swore that he didn't steal it. So that's what called, there's a shvu'ah, this shvu'ah. A person takes the shvu'at sheker, the gabay, gneva, and a number of items like an evedat, shumetiad, we'll see in the Mishnah second. Then he has to return the money to this individual, the Karen. He has to be a chomesh, an additional fifth, but this is a fifth mil bar, which really means 25% more. Plus, he has to bring an asham gzelot. So over here, now, in order to get kapara from this, he has to return the money to him. So if he stole from his friend, and he swore falsely about this, in order to get kapara, he has to actually return to his friend, no matter how far away he is. He has to chase after him and actually get the money back to his friend, as far as even afilu lemadai, even until all the way to media. I mean, even that far away, he's got to chase after him and get him the money. Now, Tosfos comes up with the Echi Timsi of what the case is here. Why is he saying Eshuana Shavuot Pruta? As he come up with the case, it's really more Shach to the Gemara and Shavuot, but he's talking about a case. How does he set up a case where we have a din about, or there's a shvuah and beis din about a shavuot pruta? Because usually we require a claim of shtei kesef and then a denial of a pruta. That's the type of case where we'll be mashbia somebody. So what's the case over here? So one possibility Tosfos says is where he takes a shvuah out of beis din, because by a shvuah of a pikadon, on when he takes the shvuah of such, it works even outside of Beis Din, and he'll be chayav even outside of Beis Din. The other possibility Tosfos says is that he actually did deny, he did claim a shtei kesef, and he denied the shavuot pruta, and that's why he's taking the shvuah, is on this shavuot pruta. I'm sorry, v'hodulo, he admitted to him about a shavuot pruta. Since he admitted to him about a shavuot pruta, that's what he's taking the shvuah on. Either way, he took a false shvuah, that he didn't owe him this shavuot pruta, and then he has to go now and return it to him. V'lo yiten lo livno, can't give it to the Nigzal's son, v'lo lushlucho, and not the messenger of the Nigzal, aval noten l'shliach Beis Din. On the other hand, he's allowed to give it to the Shliach Beis Din to take on behalf of the Nigzal. Now, the way Rashi reads l'shliach Beis Din, it really sounds like he's giving it to Beis Din itself. Rashi says, "Kantahu d'avid rabbanu ipnei takanat shavim." This is a part of the general category of takanat shavim, where Beis Din, we're going to see this on the second half of the daf today, the Beis Din basically instituted in certain in situations where it would cost so much money for this person to return the gezel, that it would actually be a disincentive for him to return the gezel, then we don't obligate him to do it. So this is one of these cases. If you have to have a huge expenditure to get the money back to the exile, we're not going to force him to go through that expenditure and then not want to do tshuva. So we say, give it to the Beis Din and it'll be fine. So you won't have to pay 100 zuz to return one shavuot pruta. So in order not to do that, takanat shavim. Tosfos takes issue with Rashi's explanation here. He says, first of all, why does it say shliach beis din? It should have said beis din. And second of all, he talks about the second half of today's daf. You see that Gemara talks about this takanat shavim and does not learn it out from our Mishnah. It learns it out from a different location. So Tosfos, on the other hand, explains shliach beis din means that he's no longer responsible. If you give it over to the beis din, the shliach beis din, to return it to the nigzal, what we do say here is that once the Shliach Beis Din takes it, this takana, there's a protection that he's no longer achrayi. He's no longer responsible to ensure that it gets to the nigzal. That becomes the responsible of the Beis Din or the Shliach Beis Din to get it back from it to him. And then he gets a kapara right away. He doesn't have to wait until it reaches the hand of the nigzal once the Shliach Beis Din takes it. As opposed to when he gives it over to his son or to his shlucho, when he gives him that money, then it doesn't work that way. Until it reaches the hand of the nigzal, it's not, he hasn't completed the transaction. He's responsible to ensure that it does get there. So now, the Mishnah continues. V'imate yachzir liyoshav. If the nigzal passes away, he still has to return it. Not only does he have to return to nigzal, go to madait for the nigzal. Tosafot explains here, he has to even go to madait to return it to his, right, his inheritors. He has to make sure that the money gets to them. And unlike the payer or the gozel here, where if his inheritors get it, they don't have to pay a chomesh or bring an asham. On the nigzal side, when the yoshim inherit it, all the obligations are still outstanding, and the gazlan has to take care of it with regards to his yoshim. Natanlo et hakeren, v'lo natanlo et hachomesh. If he repaid the principal amount that he stole, but not the additional chomesh that he was required to, or machalo al hakeren, or the nigzal said, oh, you know what, it's okay, you don't have to pay me on the keren, v'lo machalo al hachomesh, but he's not forgiven with regards to the chomesh, machalo al zelze, or he forgave him both the keren and the chomesh, he says you don't have to pay either of them, chutz mi pachot mi shavet pruta, excluding one less than a shavet pruta, I mean that his obligations towards the nigzal are less than a shavet pruta, the keren, at that point, he doesn't have to chase him down. So he no longer has to chase him down. Again, when it comes to the chomesh amount, only the keren does he have to chase him down and chase after him for everywhere in the world to get it to him, but not for the chomesh. In addition, if it's less than a shavet pruta, he also does not have to chase him down. Now, not to know at the chomesh, but not to know at the keren. On the other hand, if you paid him the additional chomesh, but you didn't give him the principal back, machalo al chomesh, or forgave him on the additional amount he had to pay, the chomesh, additional 25%, but machalo al keren, he did not, but he did not forgive him on the Karen, the principal, machalo azel ve'alzeh chutz mishavet pruta b'karen, or if he gave him for everything except for a shavet pruta, a pruta's worth of the karen or the principal, then in that case, then there's a remaining obligation in the principal of at least a shavet pruta. In that case, he's got to chase him down to the ends of the earth to return it to him in order to ensure that he gets a kaparan, that he's returned the gezel here. Natano et hakeren v'nishba lo al chomesh. He repaid the principal amount here, but then he had a chomesh that was outstanding still. Now that chomesh has to be worth more than a shavet pruta. So hari zeh mishlem chomesh al chomesh. If he takes a shvua afterwards and denies that he owes him the chomesh, meaning he's taking another shvua the sheker. He took one shvua the sheker and said, I don't owe you any money. Then he admits, you know what, I really do owe you the money. So now he owes him 125%. Meaning he owes him the principal plus the 25% additional. He pays him the principal back, for the 25% is still outstanding. It's worth more than a shavet pruta. Guy goes, you still owe me that 25%? He says, I don't owe you anything. He takes the shvua. Then he again admits, you know what, I was lying. I do owe him that 25%. Now he's got to pay not only that 25%, becomes the principal, but he has to pay an additional 25% on that. So he pays him shavet pruta. I should make that care of shavet pruta until the amount that he's taking the shvua on is less than a shavet pruta. The same thing with the pikadon. He continued to take a shvua on the chomesh. It can continue to, it's almost like an asymptotic line here, where the chomesh, he can keep taking and denying and denying and denying. He'll have to pay a chomesh, but he only has to pay, or only takes the shvua on it when the chomesh is worth more than a shavet pruta. Now, Gemara says, "Shenamar o b'pikadon, o b'tzumet yad, o b'gazel, o ashaket amito, o matzavida v'kicheshba v'nishbal sheker." These are all the cases here: pikadon, tzumet yad, which is halva, which is a loan; o b'gazel, with theft; o ashaket amito, there is where we withheld wages; o matzavida, he found something that belonged to someone else. In all these cases, v'kicheshba, he denies that he actually has this in his possession; v'nishbal sheker, he takes a shvat sheker, says, "I don't owe you the money." This person has to pay the keren, the principal back, plus the additional chomesh, which is 25%, plus he has to bring an Hashem gzeilot in order to be forgiven in this instance. That is the parsha of Hashem gzeilot. Now the Gemara brings a diuk from our Mishnah. It says, nishpalo in, lo nishpalo lo. That our Mishnah implies that the reason for the obligation over here is because he took a shvua. Had he not taken a shvua, then he wouldn't. Mani, who's the author of our Mishnah? In that the only time that he's going to have to go after, chase this guy down to Madai, is if he took a shvua. If he didn't take a shvua, he won't have to chase him down. Who's the author of this Mishnah? Lo Rabbi Tarfon, lo Rabbi Akiva. It's neither Rabbi Tarfon nor Rabbi Akiva. Why? The Tanya. Rabbi Mishnah, Gazal Echad Mechamisha. He stole from one out of five people. Ve'eni Udea. And he has no idea, Meizo, Mehen, right? And he doesn't know which one of them he stole from. V'chol echad omer oti gazal. And each one of the claimants says, I was the one who was stolen from. Meniach zela b'nehem u'mistolek k'tivir Rabbi Tarfon. He goes, he puts down the gzela in front of them, and he says, listen, you guys work it out. It's not my problem. I know I stole, but I didn't steal from all five of you. I'm putting down the money, and once I put down the money, you guys work it out between the five of you. Tosa says, it's obvious over here that it doesn't mean literally that he puts the money down in front of them, and we say, it's a fight to the death to who gets this or the strongest person to get the money. Rather, he sets the money aside, and then we wait until we clarify who this money belongs to, and then he'll give the money to the person who has the proper claim to the money. Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo zuderech motzio midei avera. This doesn't solve his problem because now he's not going to get out of the problem that he has to be a heshivat gzeila asher gazal ad sheyishalim gzeila b'chol echad v'echad. He's got to repay every individual that's there. So, man, who's the author of this Mishnah? I Rabbi Tarfon. If the author of this Mishnah is Rabbi Tarfon, afagav dishtaba amar, that even he took a shvuah, Rabbi Tarfon says, meniach gzeila b'nehem u'mistalik. You put it down and let him work. So let them work it out themselves. So if that's the case that he says, put it down and work it out themselves, then also in the case where he stole from one individual, what's the difference? He just puts it down, hands it to the Beis Din, and tells the Beis Din, you know what? He's in Madai. When he shows up, he'll come and pick up his money. Same thing here. When these five guys work it out, they'll come and pick up their money. According to Rabbi Kiva, the Shvuah is not the determining factor over here. So even if there's no Shvuah, right, that we won't solve our problem here, or we won't have kapara for his gzela until he repays everybody. So would that matter if he took a shvuah, didn't take a shvuah, if he wants to rectify the gzela that he had over here, he's got to return it to each individual. Same thing over here. If he has to chase the guy down to Madai, the only way he's going to get kapara, the only way he's going to solve his problem is if he actually gets the money to this individual. Now, the Gemara tries to solve the problem and says, Lo'olam Rabbi Kiva hi. Rabbi Kiva is really the author of our mission over here. Now, why the Gemara picked Rabbi Kiva? Rabbi Tarfon, both Rashi and Tosos point out over here, because in general, we have a principle that Kulus Tanai Stimta Aliba de Rabbi Kiva Stam. That every Tanar, most Tanaim, when they were learning in the Mishnayot, they were doing it really according to their Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, or Stam to Rabbi Akiva, so we try our hardest to make sure that Rabbi Akiva can fit into a Mishnah. So here they're going to make an attempt first to solve according to Rabbi Akiva, and then they'll try it according to Rabbi Tarfon. V'chi kamar Rabbi Akiva ad shishalim gzilel kol echad v'echad hechet ishtabahu de kamar. So when does Rabbi Akiva require you to go ahead and repay each individual to be yotzei yidei chovato? That's when he took a shvu'ah. My time, Adam Akrop, because that's what the pasuk says. When do you have to ensure that it gets back to the person that you stole it from? That is a pasuk that's found by the Asham Gzelot, which says that you must return it to the individual. That is only shayach when you take a shvuah. As when you didn't take a shvuah, we don't have that puzzle that demands you get it back to the exact individual, just that you return the gzela in general. Rabbi Tarfon, and Rabbi Tarfon says, Afagav di shtabo avod rabbana takanto. Even though he took a shvuah, the rabbanan made a takana. What takana are we talking about here? It's the same takana that Rashi mentioned in the Mishnah, which is called Tanakata Shavim. Right, that the takana of Shavim, that the individual, we don't impose upon the individual to make unreasonable efforts to rectify the situation, because then he's never going to do tshuva. So in the case where he owes all these people, or in the case where he has to go to Madai, we're not going to force him, even if he took a shvua, to go to Madai or pay back all the five people, because that's going to actually prevent him from doing tshuva. Titania, we have a bracer, Velazib, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Takana Gdola Itkinu. They made a great takana. If his expenditures to return the gzela are greater than the principal that he has, then he just places the keren chomesh in the safe at the Beis Din. He brings his Hashem and he's forgiven. And then when the nigzal shows up, he'll get it from the Beis Din. That when did they make a takana? That's when we know who he stole from. Because then the money's still going to get back to the right individual in the end. It's placed in the Beis Din's hands now, but it'll get to the right individual in the end. But on the case, right, aval gazal echad mechamishad lo yodol man gazle lo adam ramon lamarei. Here, if he places in the hands of Beis Din, then the person who's supposed to get it is never going to end up getting it. Lo verabano takanta. In that case, there's no takanta shavim, because what's the whole point of takanta shavim is that we're having him do tshuva here, and we want to encourage him to do tshuva. That's only in an instance where we actually have him returning the gzela. But in the case of the five people, if he just puts it into Beis Din's hands, then the gzela is not being returned, and there's really no tshuva being done here. So until he pays an individual, we're not going to allow him to say that there's a Takanat HaShavim, and he can place it in the hands of Beis Din. So the Rebbe Akiva is going to explain our Mishnah, the Kirish of where he took a Shavuah. When he takes a Shavuah, Rebbe Akiva says, then you're required to return it to the individual, the Nigzal, because we have a Pasuk of Gzeirsa Katuv by Sham Gzeirot that says, Asher Ulo Yitznano B'Yomashmato, that he has to return it to the specific individual in order to get Kaparan. That's how he explains our Mishnah. What about the case over here where he's Gazal Achad Mechamisha? Because Achad Mechamisha, Rabbi Kiva says, wait a minute, we have this Takanat HaShavim. This Takanat HaShavim says that in an instance where he doesn't take a Shavuah, we say, you know what, you could just drop it off at Beis Din, and when you drop it off at Beis Din, we'll take care of it from there from you, and that's the Takanat HaShavim. Rabbi Kiva says, well, Takanat HaShavim has limitations. The Takanat HaShavim is only in a case where we know who the Nigzal is, and in the end, the money will end up in the hands of the Nigzal. But in a case where it's Achad Mechamisha, when it's one out of five people, in the end, nobody's going to end up with the money, and it'll never get back to the Nigzal, then he's not going to get Kapara. So in that instance, the Chamis says that there's no reason for Takanat HaShavim. Takanat HaShavim says you're doing Tshuva, and you're getting it back to the Nigzal. Here, you're never going to get the money back to the Nigzal, so there's no application of the Takanat HaShavim. On the other hand, Rabbi Tarfon believes that even in a case where he takes the Shavuah, there's still a Takanat HaShavim, he has the right to drop it off with Beis Din, whether it's a Shavuah or no Shavuah, then he can drop it off with Beis Din and say, listen, it's in Beis Din, you guys take care of it, it's all with Beis Din, I'm done, I'm patur, because I took care of what I had to, and then you guys will work it out between you, if it's the five guys to come and get it, or if it's an exile that's far away, when he shows up at the Beis Din, then he'll take the money. Now, Tosfos over here explains that Rabbi Akiva's opinion about the fact that even when the expenditures exceed the value of the principal, that the person still has to return it, like our Mishnah. An example, on our Mishnah, where he took a Shavuah, now he's got to get it back to the individual. But Tosfos says that Rabbi Akiva still offers you the option to get it to a Beis Din, or to actually get it to the individual himself. And that, when Rabbi Akiva says that the Takanat HaShavim does not apply in a case of a Shavuah, that means that you, even if your expenditures exceed the principal, I'm still going to demand of you to take it all the way to Madai. I mean, if the nearest Beis Din is in Madai, that's what I'm going to require from you. But you still have the option, either to get it to a Beis Din or get it to the individual himself, even when the expenditures exceed the value of the principal. On the other hand, Rabbi Tarfon believes that when the expenditures exceed the value of the principal, then you don't have to even take it to a Beis Din. You don't have to take it to a Beis Din. You don't have to give it to him. You hold it in your house until you have an opportunity to get it to a close Beis Din or an opportunity to get it to him. And you never have to do anything when the expenditures exceed the value of the principal. So Tosfos is just being mitzamtzem a little bit the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon over here. Now, the Gemara is going to challenge this assumption or what we have described until this point. And the first challenge is, Meitiv Rav Huna Bar Yehuda. Rav Huna says, Amar Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Lo nechukhu Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Akiva, Oshel lakach echad mechamisha, Veinu yodeh meizem en lakach. Then when it comes to a purchase transaction, forgetting about the cases before we saw between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, their argument was back zeilah, where he stole from them. But if he purchased something from one of five people, and he now used to pay money to them, then Veinu yodeh meizem en lakach, he doesn't know who he purchased the item for, and he wants to give them the money, Shemineach demei mekach b'neim u'mistalik. He's allowed to put the money down, and he can walk away from the situation. Alma nechalku, where do they argue? Shegazal echad mechamisha b'nei adam. Veinu meyodeh mehem eza gazal. He doesn't know which one he stole from. So the Machlokes in Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon is only in a case where he stole, not in a case where he purchased an item and now he's trying to return the money. The difference being that how the item came to his possession. In the case of Lakach, he didn't do any isur. He didn't do anything wrong until this point. So now when he's trying to pay them the money, right, we're going to give him the ability, both according to Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, to place the money in the hands of Beis Din and say, you guys work it out between you. On the other hand, where he's Gozel, when he actually stole them and he violated, he did an isur to get the object into his hands, then we'll have the Machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon makes Zeila b'neim. He's still like, he puts it down and says, you know, too bad. Kiva Omer in lo takana itchel shalem gizela l'chol echad. And he's got to pay each one of them. V'istak adatcha d'ishtabo. If it's a case where he took a shavuah, mali lakach, mali gazal. Now, I just explained to you the difference between lakach and gazal. Lakach involves no isur, whereas gazal involves the isur. But if you say that the only time that Rabbi Kiva disagrees with Rabbi Tarfon is in a case where he took a shavuah, that means that there is an isur even in the case of lakach, because there's denial here. He took a shavuah the sheker, either about a transaction where he bought something, or he's saying a shavuah the sheker about gezel that he stole and now he's not willing to return. In the case there is an isur, if there's an isur violated, it sounds like everybody would agree that you have to give it back. So how could you have a machlokes Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon be premised on the fact that it is a shavuah here? So the other question, Rava asks an additional question over here. Masi b'chassid echad. We have a case with this chassid. Shalakach mishnei b'nei adam. He bought something from one of two people. V'lo yadeh amez men lakach. He doesn't know which of these two people he purchased the item from. Uvali f'nei Rabbi Tarf. When he comes to Rabbi Tarf, v'lo enach d'mei mechachah b'nei. He's still like, put your money down and let them work it out. Who owes it? V'ali f'nei Rabbi Akiva. V'lo en lecha takana. Shizu shalem l'chol echad b'chad. You can't fix, you can't rectify the situation until you pay each individual back. If it's a case, the only case where Rabbi Akiva believes that you have to return to each individual is a case of a shua, chasid mi mishtabo or a shikra. Then the case here is where he took a shvat sheker and he's being modeh that he took a shvat sheker. Since when does a chasid, how can you be called a chasid if he's taking these false shvuot? So what are you going to suggest? The chitim and the shtabo, that when he took the shua, he wasn't a chasid. Vahadar avi chasid, and he was about shuva and he became a chasid. We have a principle. Whenever the Gemara uses the term masi bechasid echad, or the Mishnah uses that, it's O Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, O Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Eli. It's one of these two individuals, Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Eli, chasidim demikaravu. They weren't balei shuvah; they were chasidim in their whole lives. So, okay, we can't set this up like Rabbi Akiva, because the way we tried to set up to Rabbi Akiva was a case of Shavuah. The Rabbi Akiva's position that you must return to each individual is only in a case of Shavuah. And if that's the case, we have two problems, because we have Rabbi Shimon Elazar who says that Rabbi Akiva agrees in a case of Lakach and not in a case of Gazal, which means there's a difference between Lokeach and Gozel. Well, if you take a Shavuah checker, there is no difference between Lokeach and Gozel, because you did something wrong in both those instances. The other problem we have is from Rava. Rava says we have a Maseh b'chasid echad. That, and we see Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarvin stick to their positions with this chassid echad who bought the item. And again, if we're talking about a shvuah here, since when would a chassid take a shvuah check? It must be in a case when we didn't take a shvuah, and still Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarvin hold of their position. So that will not work into our Mishnah. So now the Gemara tries another tact. Well, I'm Rabbi Tarvin here. The Gemara now tries to say that the author of this Mishnah is really Rabbi Tarvin. Rabbi Tarvin agrees in a case of a shvuah that it's not sufficient then that he places in the middle, but he must return it to each individual. My time. Well, what's the reason for that? Damakra, Sherhulo, Yitnenu B'yomashmato. Because of the Pasha V'sham Gzelot. Where does the Pasuk say you must return it to the individual himself? That's in a case where you have a Shvuah, because that's where the Pasuk is found. And there, Rabbi Tarfon agrees, you got to return it to each individual. Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Kiva says, okay, true, you're right. The only time we find this requirement to return it to each individual, that's in a case where he took a Shavuah. Rabbi Kiva says, but even when he doesn't take a Shavuah, we have a Knas on him that he must return it to each individual. Right, so according to Rabbi Tarfa, now that the case is not a case where he took a Shavuah, he must also have to admit that he took a false Shavuah. Myriya v'nishba, afilu below shvuah anami. What does it have to do with the shvuah? In a case where he took a shvuah, now he admits that he owes the money. Or in another case where he doesn't take a shvuah, and he now is saying that I owe the money. They both, in the end, they both come out to be the exact same case. Right? Why? The Tanya. Moder Rabbi Tarfon, ba'omer l'shnayim gazalti. A person goes in and tells two people, I stole echad megem. Maneh. Stole from one of you guys 100. Zuz. Venu day zemechim. I don't know which one. Notin la zemaneh. Venu zemaneh. Kshevar hodemi piatzmo. Because he admitted that he did something wrong. He admits that he owes them money. Now, if he wants to rectify the situation, meaning that if he wants to be Yotze Yedei Shemayim, obviously over here, Beis Din can't obligate him to pay each of these individuals because it's coming from his own admission. But if he wants to be Yotze Yedei Shemayim, right, that even though Beis Din can't mechayiv him, that if he wants to get rid of the onish and he wants to make sure that he's not going to punish for this gzeila, he has to pay both of them over here. So now, if that's the case, we see Rabbi Tarfon says that if you want to be Yotze Yedei Shemayim and you want to take care of the situation, then it doesn't matter if you took a Shavuah and then admitted that you did something wrong, or if you just admitted something up front. If you want to protect yourself and want to ensure that there's no problem here, you got to pay each individual. So we don't see this distinction in Rabbi Tarfon between taking a Shavuah and not taking a Shavuah. Tosfos points out over here that the way we're learning in the Gemara, according to Rabbi Tarfon here, that when you want to come, let's say the Yedei Shemayim, you actually have to pay each individual back. We're now having to explain the case before Maseh b'chassid echad differently, because there's clearly a chassid wants to be Yotzei Yedei Shemayim, and yet over there, Rabbi Tarfon gave him the advice just to plunk the money down and say, let them work it out between them. So Tosfos gives two possibilities of what the answer is. Either over there, they were coming, the chassid echad was coming, trying to get what's the Iker Adin. What's the halacha in Adin? Now I'm coming to ask him, what's the din? Let's say to me, Deish Shemayim. The Rav Tarfon says the Iker Adin is that you're not chayav to repay him. Let's say to Deish Shemayim, that's a different issue. Or the other possibility is, even in that case, you're not chayav let's say to me, Deish Shemayim, because there's a difference between Gezel and Lekicha. Again, we saw this distinction earlier when we were discussing Rabbi Akiva, but maybe it applies by Rabbi Tarfon as well. When does Rabbi Tarfon say that you have to be let's say to me, Deish Shemayim? That's only when there's Gezel, when there's an Iser involved. When there's an Iser involved, then we're going to obligate you to be let's say to me, Deish Shemayim. But when there is Lekicha, which is the case of the Maseba Chazir Echad, there is no Iser involved. So there we're not going to have that obligation, we're not going to force you to be let's say to me, Deish Shemayim. And therefore, over there, Rabbi Tarfon says, you know what, the Iker Din, as well as let's say to me, Deish Shemayim Din, is just drop it off at Beis Din and let them take care of it. Ella, so now we have our third solution, at least according to a Girsha that Rashi has, Ella Amar Rava. Okay, Rashi is learning out here, Rava becomes and now gives a third possibility, and this third possibility worked both according to Rabbi Kiva and according to Rabbi Tarfon. Tosfos points out that there was an alternative Girsha that did not say Ella, but rather says Amar Rava, and Rava was actually coming to answer the questions on Rabbi Tarfon. And this question that we had on Rabbi Tarfon, that's what Rava is coming to ask. That runs into some problems, and Tosfos deals with those issues if you have the other Girsha. Well, we're going to explain according to Rashi's Girsha, so that Rava is an independent statement. Shiny Masnisan. Our mission is a unique case. They came in the other the Mangazle, Veodile, because he knows who he stole from, and he's admitted to it. Came in the Efsharlo Dure Mamona the Mare, Havile Kaman Darmale, Yulo Chabiatcha. So based on this, it sounds like that the way our mission is written is that he knows who he stole, and then he admits to having stole the money, and since now that he's admitted and he could return the money to the individual, it's as if the individual says, well, you know what, you hold on to it, and you'll watch it until the time that I come back. Hilkach, nishpa, afakav, the amarle, yuli biyadecha, even though he says to him, look, you know, you hold on to it, came into bai kapara lo sagadim ateliyade. If he takes the shavuah, it's not sufficient. Even if the individual says, you know, you hold on to it until I come back, but the problem is until the money actually reaches the hands of the nigzal or the person that you took this money inappropriately from, you're not going to get kapara, and then you're going to be stuck with the onesh, or you have no protection from that onesh. On the other hand, if you do not take a shavuah, if he didn't take a shavuah, then true. Then he becomes a pikadon. It's as if he gave it to that individual. He's holding on to the money for that individual, and it's like a pikadon. He's watching until he comes and takes it from him. So therefore, the Mishnah will work according to Divrei Akol. If you look in Rashi now, he says, it's not like a case where he doesn't know who he has to give it back to, like the five people. The Hatam ben nishba, ben lo nishbahu, the pligi Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Kiva. It doesn't matter if he took a shvuah, didn't take a shvuah, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon argue over there. The Inyan Dina. So Rabbi Tarfon lo mechayiv lachzir, they had an exile. Rabbi Kiva says, min adin, you don't have to return it to each individual. Rabbi Kiva mechayiv. Afakav to lo nishba, even in a case where he didn't take a shvuah. Vahad parachteel, what about the questions before we said, Ibra Kiva, vahagav, delo ishtaba, lav pirchaim? What we said before, that Rabbi Kiva says, even in a case where he didn't take a shavuah, that's not a question. Atam dinu, right? The afagav to lo nishua, but the yaksir the kolecha, that the din is that he has to return it to each individual. Shreinu deal the migazal, because he doesn't know who he stole from. Lo nafik yedei shemaim klau, he'll never be yotzei yedei shemaim. Ava hachum as nizan nizdan man gazal. In our case of our mission, he knows who he stole from. Umodile mishato da'ad mizumanu lahashiv, and he knows and he's ready to return the money. Avagabeki pikadon, then it becomes like to him a pikadon. Hilkach nishbat chila kodem hoda. Therefore, there's a difference between whether he takes a shvuah or he doesn't take a shvuah. So the cases will be different between the case where it's five individuals and he doesn't know who to give it to it. According to that, Rabbi Kiva says that there's no way to return the money unless you give it to each individual. If you took a shvuah, just like in our Mishnah, then there's a violation, then there's a problem of shvuah. The only way to get kapara is to return it to the actual individual. On the other hand, in the case where he did not take a shvuah, Rabbi Kiva and our Mishnah is going to agree that you don't have to return it to the individual directly, because since you know who the nigzal is and you're ready to pay it, it's as if it's a pikadon in your hand, because you know who it's going to. Therefore, it's a pikadon, we don't have to worry about, let's say, Yedei Shemayim. On the other hand, in the case of the five people, since we don't know who the money is going to, you can never be, let's say, Yedei Shemayim. We can't say it's a pikadon with you, because we have no idea who the money is going to be, let's say, Yedei Shemayim. The same thing with Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon is going to say, in a case, whether you took a shavuah or you did not take a shavuah, we're not going to obligate you to return the money to each individual. You can place it in Beis Din and everything will be fine. All right, do you want to talk about a separate issue, the separate issue of, let's say, Lidei Shamayim, that by Rabbi Tarfon is going to agree in a case like, for instance, our Mishnah, where you took a Shavuah, if you take a Shavuah and you want to get Kapara from that Shavuah and to be Let's Say Lidei Shamayim, you got to get it back to each individual. So there's a difference between the Iker Chiyuv or the Iker Minadin, where Rabbi Tarfon is going to say that there's no obligation to return it to each individual, versus Let's Say Lidei Shamayim, then when it comes to the Tzedi Yedei Shemayim, then you got to get it back to each individual. And we're going to say that applies by a case of Shua, where there's Isur and there's a need for Kapara. That's where we need you to get it back to the individual to be, let's say, the Yedei Shemayim. Whether that means taking it all the way to Madai or that means returning it to each individual. Okay, we'll stop over here.